Welcome to the Language Mastery Show. This is your host, John Fotheringham. In today's show, I chat with Chris Broholm of the Actual Fluency Podcast, an amazing show that has, I must admit, far more interviews than this one, but we'll get there eventually. In the interview, Chris and I discuss how he got into language learning, his daily routines and patterns, and his favorite tools for language learning. For show notes, go to languagemastery.com. And if you want to earn a little extra karma this week, go over to iTunes, search for Language Mastery, and leave a review. I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you, and enjoy the show.
Hello, Chris.
Hey, John. How's it going?
I'm very well, other than the cold. How are you doing?
It's a bit of the season, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We actually have been blessed here. The last week was gorgeous. Very unusual for Seattle February, but I got the germs anyway, so it goes.
Tell me about your site, because I must be honest, it's one of the most polished and professional looking sites out there. But
oh, thank you, I appreciate
that. The few times I've come across it, I just, the only thing I sort of struggle with is, tell me more about you. You know, uh-huh. it's very scarce on the personal details. So
interesting. Yeah, that's actually something I've struggled with over the years, is how much of me, you know, I should put into it. And I've been trying to do more of that, you know, both in writing and also just in, you know, like I changed the logo to have my name, you know, with John Fotheringham at the top there and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting. I obviously have not done enough to do that. but so it goes. So it started, I think, as most of these things do, is just a labor of love and just something, a way to kind of share my views on language learning, my things that have worked, things that have not worked for me. My background was in linguistics in school, and I've spent much of the last decade teaching and learning languages, but I've also done a lot of other things. I've worked in startup companies, I've started my own companies, so I've done lots of things, but I keep coming back to language as one of the sort of bedrock parts of my life. I can't shake it, no matter how hard I try.
It's nice, though. Yeah. I like it. So many opportunities, I guess that's the headline, so many opportunities mm-hmm. in languages. You do whatever you want. I mean, if you want to write, if you want to read, if you want to translate, if you want to travel, you know, it's
right.
It's all there.
Localization is huge. Localization, especially here locally. You know, we have Nintendo here. We have Microsoft. We have Amazon. I mean, lots of these massive companies that hire hundreds and hundreds of translators to, you know, localize all their content and their software and stuff. So none of that interests me, unfortunately. That's not what I'm into. I did a brief stint in translation when I was working for the Japanese government, but that was certainly not my favorite end of the language spectrum.
No, I find it quite boring as well. I did do it a little bit, but the thing about translating is that I can see why people enjoy it, and I almost enjoyed it. But, you know, the creativity is nice because you kind of have to, you know, you're not translating word for word, you're kind of translating meaning.
Right.
But what was really hurting me was that I was translating from, I would translate into English from Danish or the other way around. Mm-hmm. And because I always thought that English was a better and more flexible language, I always kind of used that as my inner voice. Mm. So I was always kind of saying, okay, so English has all these awesome ways of saying things. And then you have Danish and it all sounds like crap when you translate. So yeah, that lasted, I don't know, a few months.
And then that's interesting.
Too bored with it.
Yeah. I hadn't heard that.
That's so much work. I mean, you need to spend so many hours per page to get a really, really awesome translation. Of course, top translators get, you know, hundreds of dollars per hour probably. Right. But still, I mean, starting out, that's a bit of a stretch to go to immediately.
Right. Well, plus, it's just like with writing. I mean, it's such a isolating activity where you spend a lot of time alone at a computer. And as an extrovert, you know, that can be very draining on my soul. But plus, the biggest thing for me is I realized that it had very little to do with actual spoken fluency. I mean, I met lots of professional Japanese translators, for example, you know, native speakers of Japanese, who could translate very well, mm-hmm. but had a very hard time actually speaking and holding a conversation.
Yeah, and it's so sad, I feel.
It is
like.
Very sad, because they work so hard, and yeah. they assume, I think, that those skills would, you know, lend themselves to each other, but they don't. They're just very, very different.
Yeah, I know a woman in the UK who's a professional translator who translates from, you know, Russian into German, into English, into a few other languages. But when I asked her about some Russian things and sort of spoken Russian, she was very uncertain and mm-hmm. could hardly say a word, but give her like a highly technical piece of paper about some instructions or something. And she'd understand it completely and be able to translate in a jiffy, you know?
Right.
But to me, that's just languages to be spoken, to right. communicate. And, you know, that's also hard. But mm-hmm. just imagine having such a high level of the language and then not be able to just go down to a cafe and exactly. talk to people.
Plus, I think if you do reach, you know, spoken fluency first, you can always build translation skills on top of that.
Right.
But it's much harder to go the other direction.
Yeah. You know. No, I think that's definitely right. Like speaking before writing and reading, yeah, for instance.
Just as we did with our, you know, native tongues. So
yeah, it's very natural, actually, now you mention it.
you know, not to say there aren't differences between, you know, first and second language acquisition, but I also think, you know, there seems to be these two camps. There's the people that say, oh, learn a language like a baby. You know, sort of the Rosetta Stone idea. And then there's those on the other end that say, you know, adult language learning is completely different, you know, and you need to sit in a classroom and consciously memorize right. things. And so I fall definitely somewhere in the middle where I think, as I think a lot of us do in this space, that, yeah, there's something to be learned from how we acquired our first tongue. But then we are adults, so we do have massive vocabularies already. So we have some hacks, you know, some tricks we can do to accelerate the process, too. So.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that a lot of people use it as an excuse. Like, I'm too old. That's a very common excuse.
Right.
And people say this when they're like 24. It's even yeah. crazier, but.
I'm 16 now. Yeah. Too old to learn how to.
Stuck developing.
Right. Yet I can still learn how to drive a car and learn a new sport. But no, languages, no, that's different.
But this is probably one of the coolest things about neurolinguistics, the plasticity. Yes. That's one of the most cool concepts that I know. And as far as I know from the talks I heard on it, plasticity doesn't really stop. It just gets, you know, slower or different.
Right.
So,
and I think a lot of what you do with, you know, nutrition and exercise and what you, how you think and how you use your brain can really affect it a lot. I mean,
of course.
I'm actually, my main thing I do these days, I'm doing what's called functional nutrition. I'm in a program learning how to become what's called a nutritional therapy practitioner.
Wow.
And we're learning so much about really how, you know, the things you put in your mouth, how much that really does affect not only your brain function, but also your brain structure. I mean, it's really fascinating stuff.
It's cool. So what's the biggest thing we're not getting or the thing we're getting?
Probably the biggest thing we're not getting enough of is fat. There's this mm-hmm. huge, you know, people are scared of fat. There's been a lot of, I think, very, you know, well-intentioned, but, you know, altogether bad advice has been given about how people can be healthier and thinner. And yet, you know, there's been this whole low-fat craze now for 40 years. And what has it done? Is people have gotten less and less healthy,
mm-hmm.
more heart disease, more, you know, and they have been eating less fat. So, and you look back at our ancestors, I mean, they would have had, you know, relatively high fat, high protein diets, and they didn't have RDs, they didn't have dementia.
Right.
I mean, anyway, but I digress. So
yeah, I think you answer something.
Yeah.
The only problem is that I was watching a program called QI in England.
I love QI. Yeah.
Oh, you know
that's
it.
A great
oh, fantastic.
Show. Yeah, yeah.
And in one of the shows, Stephen Fry said that everything we know now, or sorry, 50% of what we know today
uh-huh.
will be proven false in 50 years.
True.
No, so
that is true.
Nutrition is really hard because,
yeah.
you know, what cycle are we in? Because people are saying,
right.
I know now everything is paleo, right? No carbs, just go for protein and fat.
Well, and I would say, because I kind of subscribe to that model, I think that's also a bit of a false. Well, some people do prescribe that, but I think most of the people that are in the know, people that I respect that, you know, base things more on research and on evidence-based advice, they would not say low carb. They would say moderate.
Right.
So this idea that, you know, a paleo diet is supposed to be extremely low carb and that all you need is meat, that's, I think, a bit of a straw man, you know, that a lot of people, and it would be, I think, for a lot of people, a problem, because you do need some amount of carbohydrate, especially women.
Yeah.
If you go too low carb, you can really mess up your thyroid.
Right. I tried it for a bit. They do these, what do they call them? Keto or something?
Mm-hmm. Ketogenic.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tried to do that for a while and I could just feel so many changes that I was like, oh no, I need to get some of these carbs I can feel.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I think a powerful therapeutic approach, but I think for most people, most of the time, I think it's probably not necessary and potentially can be dangerous. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, just keeping it lower, the lower end. I mean, the average American eats about 300 grams of carbs a day, and that's crazy.
Wow.
you know, it should be between like 50 to 150 or so is probably a good range for most people.
Right.
But we digress. This is a language podcast. People don't want to hear about nutrition from me, at least not on this show. Maybe that's my
next podcast.
Well,
you should make another one because
I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, you should. It's a cool topic. I definitely subscribe.
Well, thank you. Well, just to finish up that tangent briefly. So, yeah, essential fatty acids would be a big thing. And then blood sugar. So having too high blood sugar swings, and having high insulin all the time because of all that sugar damages the hippocampus. And if you damage your hippocampus, you can't make new memories very well. So
people with diabetes have reduced memory function?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
As do people on statins. You know, trying to lower heart disease, even though it doesn't, there's been no evidence that actually works. anyway, that's another whole other tangent, but let's pull it back because I know it's late in the day for you. I don't want you to be up till midnight because of my gift for Gab. So I love your story of how you got into languages. I mean, it's a sad story, but I think it has a happy ending at least.
Yeah.
If it's not too personal, would you mind sharing a little bit about how your journey developed and how you got into languages?
Yeah, sure. When I first, I guess the story goes back to when I was in elementary school and we were learning languages, and I seemed to have a natural talent for them, developing really high levels of English and at a very young age, and doing pretty much the same with German. And by the time I got to the seventh grade, I was living in this happy bubble. You know, my parent had two parents, like most people, and the sister. We had a dog. We had a nice house in the suburban area, and everything seemed to be, you know, just perfect, like a movie. Mm-hmm. And then one day, I just get the news, and you know, looking back, this was probably coming for some time. But when you're just a, I don't know, 12-year-old kid, everything seems like a fantasy world anyway. So right. I got the news that my parents were getting divorced. And this sort of sent me in this downward spiral of not really bothering with school. I was like, you know, my bubble was broken. Why should I study math or whatever? So my grades sort of halved in a year and everything was going down the drain. And that's when I kind of lost the interest in languages as well. And it wasn't really because of the languages, but because of just everything else was just terrible. So fast forward a few years of mediocrely finishing school and also high school, and I lost my father, which didn't help. It was unexpected, and sort of now it was really serious. Looking back, it was really serious. Like, this was full blown depression. There's no way around it, and I wish there was an easier way of sort of telling about it, but this is the facts, and I helped it by sharing this sort of very candidly that other people in the same position can see that there's still hope, you know, never give up.
Well, plus, it seems a lot of people that are depressed, they don't realize it, that it's not just, you know, oh, I'm in a funk or something that'll go away.
Right. Yeah. I was definitely in denial as well, because I was like, oh yeah, I've heard all these things about depression, and you know, I was brought up with Google, basically, you know, the internet. So every time I heard a new word that I didn't know, I would just look it up. And of course, this is very handy for language learning, but also for general information. So I was like pretty arrogantly assuming that I was too intelligent for being depressed and I was just being lazy. But looking back, I was pretty hopelessly depressed and I was just playing video games all day and I was getting more and more obese and eating horribly and spending way too much money, leading to, you know, having a horrible financial situation and living at home. And but then out of the blue came sort of my solution or my rescue was that I was looking on YouTube, and I think I must have been looking at YouTube quite a lot back then, but I was finding some of these language learners like Benny Lewis and Luca Lampriello and Richard Simkut, and they were doing all these multilingual videos, and I was like, you can just learn languages, but don't you need a school or a teacher or stuff? And they just planted the idea in my head, and I was like, I'm just gonna go for it. And I started the blog to kind of chronicle it because I'd been following other bloggers in different areas for a while. And I thought, you know, maybe I could help some other people with this, and definitely myself, because I knew that if I just started learning languages without any form of accountability, I knew that I would just give up after a week, because that's how I've been doing for you know, the last 10 years or so. So why should this be different? And the blog really helped me to keep going. And you know, as it is when you start a website, there's like your mom and three other people looking. Right. And it was like that for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. But after I went to the Polyglot Gathering in Berlin, I met a lot of people and suddenly I was networking and it just became real. And I'd love to talk more about that that gathering in a second. But
yeah, that'd be great.
That was basically the story. And now a year later, everything's looking up. I suddenly have a very nice job, lots of friendly colleagues. It's an online job, but we have a great sort of a community. And I was visiting the company in over Christmas. And I've almost, it's hard to define, but I'd say I've almost learned Russian to the point where I can have just normal conversation, understand television and stuff.
That's great.
Yeah, and this is about 11 months in, and you know, the research for the project started a few months earlier, so it's over a year now. And although I still don't feel fantastic you know, always, and I guess it's also normal for people to have these dark periods anyway, but I definitely feel a million times better, and it changed my life completely.
So what did you do in those 11 months? How did you go from zero to, you know, feeling fairly comfortable?
You mean specifically for the Russian or?
Yeah, we talk about Russian and then just in general, maybe on other, because I know, you know, obviously the way you learned English and I think German as well was probably a bit different.
Yeah, that was just basic school and immersion from video games and movies. But yeah, Russian, the funny thing was that I'd been watching somebody like Benny Lewis and he was always like fluent in 3 months. I was like, sounds easy enough. I'll do it. And I picked Russian because the video game I was playing had a lot of Russian players. And I figured, you know, if I could learn Russian, I could learn anything. So I started with Russian. And I think 3 months in, I could probably say hello and my name is. And that's when I realized, you know, it's not as easy as it looks.
Right.
These people that I mentioned earlier and a lot of the people who talk about their language learning openly make it seem very easy. And it's hard to define because the process is easy, right? Like you just learn some words, then you learn some grammar, and then you learn some sentences, and then suddenly there's a language.
Right. I like telling people that this is a perfect example of the difference between simplicity and easy, you know?
Right.
So like learning a language is simple, but not necessarily easy. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It just right when you talked about being able to say hello and goodbye in Russian. Did you ever see Transformers, the movie?
No, I did not.
Oh, there's just a part. A guy in the movie, he says his Russian is really good, and they show up to this like, you know, CD bar or whatever to get like some intelligence about stuff, and you know, they slide open the little window in the bar door, and you know, he says, "До свидания," and the guy says, "That means goodbye," and he closes the thing.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, sorry.
You see that in people, though. Luckily, not too much in the Polyglot community. Like the dedicated learners, you don't see it that much. But there are sort of people out there who are very, I don't know what to call them really, but you know, they're not very honest about it. They'll say, oh, I speak French. And then you ask them a French question and they'll be like, I didn't learn that yet or something.
Right.
And it's really obvious that they don't speak any pretty much.
Yeah.
So you see that a lot too, but luckily I find that the community itself is pretty genuine and legit.
And humble. I mean, I think most people, very
humble.
You'd ask, you know, that's a problem I have constantly is, you know, people ask about like Japanese or Mandarin. And I know there's so much I don't know still, you know, every day when I read something or hear something, I mean, there's so many things I still have yet to learn in different, especially different domains of, you know, expertise, things I don't usually read about or talk about. And so when someone asks you, oh, how is your Japanese? Are you fluent? And that question is always so, you know, I always ask, do you want the long answer or the short answer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think the concepts in language learning, almost every single concept is so fluid and, you know, just up for debate and subjective opinion that it's impossible to have definitions. I feel like it's like, what does fluency even mean?
Right.
What does speaking a language mean? Because if I say do svidaniya, I obviously am speaking Russian, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm not speaking the language. I'm speaking something of the language.
Right.
Anyway, it's a very confusing, and I hesitate to say that I speak Russian, or German, or I guess even Danish, my native language. I hesitate to say I speak because it's such a perfect goal. I feel like when
right.
you say that,
and when you talk about perfection, I mean, then you're definitely.
Yeah,
there is no definition because there's words in English. Lots of words in English I don't know. It's a massive,
of course,
lexicon.
Like 100,000, right, or more maybe.
I think I've heard lots of different numbers, but I've heard 200,000. I've heard over a million.
Really?
I don't know. It's hard to say because there's so many new, you know, neologisms from technical things, but anyway.
Yeah, every time they invent a new bit and bob, they have to give all the things new names, I guess.
Right.
So anyway, I was in doing Russian, and I think one of the most exciting journeys of language learning is to kind of learn how to learn. Mm-hmm. And that sort of also became a big theme for my blog, because there's so many ways to learn languages and people have 20 different ways each. So when you ask somebody, he'll say, oh, you just do this, this, and this. And you're like, yeah, that sounds great. And then you turn around and talk to another guy, and he's like, yeah, I usually do that, this, and that, you know. And you just come up to this conclusion that, okay, I'm just going to try this, and if I like it, I'll keep doing it. And for me, I don't have hard habits. So I tried a lot of different things with Russian, and I had a huge break. I think I did about a month or two I usually call this the honeymoon period, and it works in other areas as well. But basically, when you start something new, you're so excited about it that you just go 120 miles an hour at it. And I just kind of burned out in a way for lack of development. You know, I wasn't getting as far as I'd hoped. And I had a huge break, I would say, from March until maybe something like July or even August, where I was just not doing much more than just doing a bit of flashcards here and there and just talking to someone in Russian, and very bad Russian at that, you know, flicking through the grammar book. And I think the problem was lack of focus, and I wasn't really being hard enough on myself, where, you know, a lot of people say that, oh, you should just watch some TV shows and listen to some radio and stuff. And those things are good for in addition to any learning you're doing, but they're not replacements. You know, you have to sit down with some kind of, you need to learn vocabulary somehow, and you need to learn grammar somehow, usually. I mean, this is a simplified way of looking at it, but.
Right. Plus, and the listening and TV activities that will only improve your passive understanding. They won't do much for your active ability to actually speak. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So when I was doing these things, it was really just procrastination, like to avoid doing the things that really boosted my learning. And that came later in about, I would say, September. I finally bit the bullet and took an italki lesson. And I should have done it 100 years before, but as a shy introvert, you know, it's really hard to talk to strangers online. And it might seem interesting as a podcast host to have that personality, but it was definitely a challenge for me. And when I finally got started, it was suddenly a whole new level of commitment. And like the blog was serving as a tool for me to keep going, the weekly tutoring sessions I was having, you know, were just fantastic in terms of sticking to it. And then I set myself a challenge of learning. The original challenge was insane, but that was learning like 5,000 words in 3 months on Memrise. Mm-hmm. And that was completely unrealistic. So I totally burned out from that. But I did get it to about 1,500 words. And in addition to the tutoring sessions, I was suddenly having like hour-long discussions purely in Russian about the weirdest things too. You know, my tutor would just, if I mentioned anything, she would just be like, oh, what's this about? And it's like, yeah, I'm describing a hippie settlement in the middle of Copenhagen. You know, that was, you know, they illegally squatted back in the 60s in a military base. And I'm explaining this in Russian 11 months after having started learning the language, you know.
That's great.
Yeah, fantastic. And this is basically where I am today. And I'm I'm able to speak and understand a lot. Obviously, television and radio and any kind of native material is still out of reach because they speak so fast.
Yeah.
But, you know, if people slow down just a little bit, I'll be able to understand the gist of most and follow TV shows. So now it's just basically building on from that, which is, I guess, somewhere between A2 and B1 and just building it onto a higher level where I can just sit down and watch a TV show and just understand every sentence.
Right.
Maybe not every word, but about every sentence.
Yeah, the context and the story flow. Sure. You mentioned a bit ago that you don't have sort of hardened habits, but could you give me maybe a rough idea of like what an ideal day of language learning would look like for you? And maybe that changes, but like right now, if you had a perfect day of Russian learning, what would that look like?
Right. I think it's important to get up early because you are extremely productive, or at least I am, and most people I've talked to are extremely productive during the first few hours of getting up. So getting up, I would get up around 6 a.m. and I would have my first session, which would, I would say, about half an hour, maybe 20 minutes, half an hour. And that would be probably memory-based learning, so something like flashcards or Memrise or whatever you use, Anki maybe. And then I would have another two of those sessions, just having an hour and a half, maybe an hour total in a day. And that might sound weird, but I find that less is really more sometimes.
Right.
And I find that if I just go all in and take like 3 or 4 hours in a day, and I know some people can do this, and I'm really fascinated about it. Maybe you have the same, but some people can just open a book and just sit and read it for hours and hours. And I'm talking about technical books, of course, not just you know, Harry Potter or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm sure anyone can sit down with a page turner and read it all day. But like, if you're sitting down with Harry Potter in Russian and you have sort of a basic understanding and you need to look up every 10 words,
right?
That's a very draining activity for me, at least.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I get completely bored by it. So for me, I would say, and I also talked to a lot of top polyglots about this, and they seem to agree that it's about frequency more than sort of quantity.
Right.
So for me, it would just be 3 sessions a day, and then I would have italki tutoring sessions twice a week. I think any more often than twice a week, you don't have enough processing time. There's this italki challenge going around. I don't know if you've followed it.
Mm-hmm.
But basically doing 20 hours of tutoring in a month and a half. And I started out doing an hour a day just to get ahead of it because I knew that maybe I'd had work or something.
Right.
And by doing an hour a day, I really realized that this is too much. You know,
yeah, that's a lot.
It was helpful and it was nice to talk and I was speaking really well, but I was just like, I was not processing the new information.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you have a tutor like me that every time I say something wrong, she'll type it into the box correctly.
Which is awesome.
It's super awesome. But that's like 200 new terms.
Right.
And it might be several words in each term. I mean, that's a lot of data to process in just 24 hours.
Yeah, you don't have enough time to assimilate it. You just
not at all.
You're trying to pile on stuff the same time new stuff's coming on, and yeah, it's just overwhelming.
Yeah, so for me, two days a week is probably pretty perfect. You could do it less frequently, I feel like, as well. But by doing it twice a week, you're also constantly keeping yourself accountable in between lessons to constantly improve.
Right.
If you just have a lesson every 2 weeks, that might be helpful for you speaking, but you also might take it too easy on yourself in between lessons because there's so much time. And I think the best Russian I ever spoke was after over a month-long break. I had a session on the 3rd of December, and the iTalki Challenge started on the 15th of January. And that session was amazing. It was one of the best I've had.
Yeah, that's come up a lot, actually, on people I've interviewed, that, and in my own experience too, that idea of a gestation period where you don't really, you kind of just relax and rest for a bit, and somehow the language sort of keeps growing on its own inside. Not too long, but just, yeah.
Yeah, of course you'll forget words.
Right.
I'm sure, but other things just kind of grow and, you know, they just kind of solidify in a way.
I think grammar especially, because that sort of is about, you know, it's procedural memory instead of declarative. I think that kind of memory seems to take longer to build and form.
Yes. So for me, that would be a three 20-minute lessons. Sorry, not lessons, sessions of probably flashcarding or shadowing, you know, reading something and understanding it. And then a lesson every other day, or sorry, you know, twice a week. So,
and how long are those sessions usually?
The tutoring sessions, I prefer 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. I have been doing an hour for a long time, but that's because my tutor has very competitive hour prices and not very competitive half hour prices. And I, you know, she's very nice. I could just tell her, you know, I'll buy an hour and then we can spread them out 2 days. She would do that. But I think that's a little bit, you know, she's already, I don't know what the minimum wage in America is, but,
not enough. You
know, yeah, right. The iTalki wages, I think, are very competitive for the learners, and I think for the teachers it's sometimes unfair. That's why I regularly give her bonuses in that I book lessons and then I don't do them. I just give her time off, because, you know, she's getting something like $10 an hour after iTalki fees, right. And she's taking so much time out of her, you know, unpaid time to help me. Every time I write on Skype, she'll help me with huge paragraphs and understandings and explanations and everything. So I think it's only fair. But
right.
Yeah, I prefer half an hour, because I don't know if you try this, but after an hour of speaking a newish language, my brain is just so foggy that the last 15 minutes, I don't even know what I'm doing half the time.
Right.
So I think for sake of focus, if you have higher levels of focus, I think an hour is just fine. Mm-hmm. But I would rather have half an hour, you know, twice as often than have 1 hour half the time.
Yeah, I think that makes sense too. Plus, you could schedule an hour for yourself, use 30 of that to speak with the tutor, and then spend the next 30 minutes reviewing, you know, the vocabulary and everything that came up.
Right. Edit into session. Your flashcards.
Exactly.
I'm too lazy for that, but
but ideally, yes.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're speaking ideally. Yeah, I forgot for a second.
So aside from doing a few sessions of flashcards and other kind of memory work, and then talking with a tutor on iTalki, are there any other ways you try to fit in language throughout the day?
I try to listen to music. I really love the Disney Russian music. Particularly the Frozen soundtrack is just incredible in every language, it seems like. Mm. So I have that on repeat. I
haven't watched it yet, I feel.
You haven't seen it yet?
Well, so I was taking care of my nephew, actually, for 2 years. And during that period, I saw every, you know, kids movie there is, of course. But after I passed the baton and moved back to Seattle, I don't have a good excuse to go watch.
Well, you have to, just get it for your target language, the one you're working on right now. It's fantastic.
Good idea.
Yes, try to watch some television shows. My tutor recommended one for me called "Pazledni iz Magikan," and it's about an where's he from? He's from Armenia, and he's living in Moscow with his Russian wife, and he has three daughters. And it's a very funny series. Even though if you don't understand anything, the plot is just hilarious. So if there's any Russian students listening to this, then I can definitely recommend that.
Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes. You'll have to send me that title.
Yeah, they're all on YouTube, all the episodes, all the seasons, and very nice quality. And, you know, they speak very fast, so understanding everything is not really realistic unless you get to a very high level. But for me, I understand the gist of every episode. And to me, that's good enough to be interested, because if you don't understand what's going on, then I feel like you get bored after 2 minutes.
Right.
So for me, and then the humor is nice. So watch a little bit, read a little bit, and yeah, that's about it. I think I'm exploring, particularly now that I'm kind of transitioning into intermediate stages, mm-hmm. I'm exploring how to make that better. And I think reading and writing maybe comes at this stage. And I think that once I have a higher vocabulary, you know, I only have a vocabulary of maybe 1,500, 2,000 words at most. So my focus right now is to build that to about 5,000 or 6,000, which is a very natural level to start reading books, mm-hmm. and start reading from there and gain vocabulary another way than the flashcards.
Right.
So for me, variety is important, but also finding what is enjoyable to me. You know, I have a friend called Robin McPherson, and he can just sit down with a book, like we talked about, and an old school dictionary, and just look up words all the time. And I'm just like, how did you do that?
that doesn't work for me, certainly.
No, not. Me neither. So yeah. That's the most important thing, just trying a lot of things and see what works. And it also changes with your mood. Like, 1 week I feel like watching stuff, and the next week I feel like doing flashcards. And I just make sure it's not boring, because then
right.
I won't do it.
Yeah, there's that challenging middle ground between, you know, being disciplined and making sure you do work on a regular basis, but then not feeling forced to do things you don't enjoy.
Right.
And that's a tricky balance I find to meet. But when I do, I definitely, you know, improve a lot faster
and enjoy the process.
Yeah, it's really hard. But like you said, you know, doing a variety of things can help. So
yeah. And like, you'll find what you like.
Right. Like one of the things I've changed now in like my habits, for example, is instead of committing to a certain number of words or a certain number of minutes or pages, whatever, I just commit to do something.
Right.
Which is a bit counterintuitive to a lot of goal setting advice, which is they need to be very specific. But I'm finding lately that actually being setting the bar really low for winning.
Wow. You know,
actually makes it much more likely for me to do it and then to even do more than I would have otherwise.
That's so interesting that you bring this up now, because I literally have a blog post in my writing program right now. And it's,
really?
Yeah, and it's, I think it's about 1,500 words now, and I'm not quite finished with it yet. I just need to polish it. But obviously, once this audio goes live, it would have gone out. But that's one of the headings is like, don't be too ambitious.
Right.
And I think that it's a very controversial topic. Mm-hmm. For the reasons you mentioned, but I totally agree. I think it's better to, and obviously I speak also from somebody who has sort of a more, due to depression and mental focus being very low at times, it's also beneficial for someone like me to say, okay, I'm just going to do 50 memorized words and then I'm done. Or I'm just going to open memorize and whatever I'll do.
Right.
You know, these baby steps.
Right.
And that's basically what I argued in the post, is that if you start out by saying, I'm going to learn 5,000 Russian words, you're going to fail in a week.
Yep.
That's just how it is.
Even though you didn't really fail, because you did learn some, right?
Right.
You just didn't hit your predefined goal. Yeah.
You just feel like a failure.
Exactly.
And that's devastating. Whereas learning 100 words, if your goal was, you know, 20, is a huge victory.
Right, right.
It's a fantastic victory. And, right. And it's interesting you bring it up, because I think a lot of people would disagree with being, I guess, pessimistic in a way, but yeah. I agree. I like it more. I think it's better to get lots of small wins, mm-hmm. and then just build on it. You can always make your goal bigger, but it seems like it's very hard to make your goal smaller.
Yeah. I think especially now, and, you know, the bigger is better mentality of the modern world, bigger, faster, stronger, you know.
Right.
But yeah.
And, that was, you know, my army motto for squadron, actually.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, faster, stronger, better, I think.
Oh nice. Stupid. Do they have mandatory service?
Yes and no. Okay. I think about 5,000 people get drafted each year.
Oh, I see.
Okay. And then the rest are volunteers. Interesting. We don't have a huge army.
Well, having big armies can lead to big problems, as my country can you know, testify to.
You have a huge army. That's your biggest budget, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't want to get into that. I may lose some listeners if I express my opinion on that subject.
I see. Yeah. Moving on.
Hey, moving on, yeah. So I wanted to talk about, real quick to finish up the smaller goals thing. So, you know, as an analogy for me in health, so I, for a long time, had a goal of 10,000 steps every day, mm-hmm. Which I tracked on my phone. And I would very rarely hit that, especially when I'm writing a lot and spending a lot of time, you know, at a computer. And I kept feeling like a failure. So instead of committing to 10,000 steps, right now, all I have on my habit tracker is walk. That's it.
Right.
Just says walk. And it's up to me to decide what that means, you know. And some days I do. I do 15,000 steps. And some days I do 2,000. But I don't feel like a failure if I don't actually, you know, hit exactly. some number. So anyway.
And you'll build on that, right? You know, exactly. It goes up because every time you walk, you feel like you can do just a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And some days you won't, and that's totally fine. I mean, there's also a big problem with, and you know, I love the really, really talented language learners like, you know, like Benny and Luca. These people are so talented at what they do, or like Richard Simcott. Mm-hmm. I guess even somebody like Tim Dona, I haven't spoken to him yet, but they're so talented at what they do, and yet, you know, they don't seem to. There's a lack of realism as well, and I know that Benny has been trying to do that lately to report on that. But it just, if you look at them, it seems like you have to strive for perfection, right? It's right. Like, how do you do this best, and how do you do that best?
Yeah.
And I feel like everything is just like we just talked about methods, right? I just shared what I do, and I should have probably prefaced that with saying that I totally believe that everything is up for discussion when it comes to methods,
mm-hmm.
and I think that you need to find out what works for you. And when it comes to perfectionism, it's even more important that you don't let yourself kind of, you know, when you see somebody saying, oh, I speak 12 languages, you can't start out by saying my goal is to speak 12 languages.
Right.
Like, what was his name? Anthony from the Polyglot conference in Budapest has a wonderful talk called the Polyknot. And his recipe for learning 10 languages was learn nine and add one.
Mm-hmm.
So he started that if you know one language and you want to know two languages, you just add one. And if you want to learn three, you know two and add one, and so on and so forth. The problem is that when people look on YouTube and they see someone like Tim speak in 25 languages or whatever, I know that he doesn't speak all of them fluently, but you just get this insane mountain you have to climb to strive towards. So that's also why I like my position, because I didn't think about when I started out, because I honestly wanted to be like Benny or Luca or these great people,
mm-hmm.
Because I thought, you know, people want to listen from success stories. And I just realized that in the last few months, I just realized that I am kind of the dose of reality in a sense where not everything is fun and games. And even if you're super motivated to learn languages, it doesn't make it easier to do it on a daily basis always. And so this kind of ambition to become perfect, the search for perfection. And I think the title of my book is going to be The Imperfect Language Learner, but that's a little bit of a, I guess a tidbit or a little secret for the listeners.
Yeah. And when would we be seeing this book? Is this
something? The plan is to have it ready for the Polyglot gathering in Berlin, which is on May 1st. But it, you know, I find it's very difficult to write in the first place, I find, because it's such a moody thing for me. I need to be inspired. So it could be written next weekend if I feel really inspired, or I might not even finish it for the gathering, but I'm getting it out this year, and I know that for sure.
Hmm. Very cool. I look forward to reading it.
I'll send you a copy.
That'd be awesome. So you mentioned the Polyglot conference or gathering in Berlin, and you mentioned earlier you want to talk about that. So now is a perfect segue.
Yeah, the nice one. The gathering changed my life. And it did so because when I was starting to learn languages at home, as like a serious venture, I was networking with people, of course, in a very, you know, Facebook-like way. Didn't really know anything about people. But then I signed up for the gathering, and it's a funny story. I didn't know anyone. Of course, when I started, I didn't know anyone except for the big names, you know, like everyone knows. And then suddenly I was looking in one of those Facebook groups, I think it was called Polyglots or something. And there was a post by Judith Mayer who put out that, hurry up, secure your spot for the first Polyglot gathering in Berlin. And I was like, what's this? I just started my Polyglot adventure. I surely must check this out. And I just saw that it was like, oh, we have 20 spots available and it's going to be amazing with talks and people. And I was just like, I need to go there, you know, immediately. So I just booked my ticket immediately. I just said yes. I didn't even check my calendar. I just said, wow. I'm going. Send the money on PayPal, whatever, and book the flights. And I went. And I'm so glad I did. It was so amazing. Like, and this is just a story of the from the fanboy in me. You know, I mentioned Benny a few times, and this is a true story of what happened. In the very first day of the conference, I was sitting on a row for the introduction to the whole conference, sitting on a row with my roommate, Chris Huff, who became a really good friend of mine to this day. And we were sitting on a row of five chairs, and there were three chairs occupied, me, Chris, and somebody else. And then Judith was just about to begin saying welcome. And then who walks up and sits down in the chair just next to me? Of course, Benny Lewis, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when it just became real to me. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a really important distinction or realization for me, that this isn't just something I'm sitting in my basement doing, or, you know, I don't live in a basement, but it seems to fit the story anyway. You know, it's not something you're just doing on your own as a kind of a way to pass time. It's a real thing, and the Polyglot community is super real. And by walking around these people, the motivation was just incredible. Like, I can't explain it, but, you know, some of these people had 20 languages on their name tags.
Yeah.
And I know they don't all speak at, you know, C2 level or whatever, but some of them damn sure gave the impression they did. And, you know, Richard Simcott's name tag said, try me. So that was fantastic. And obviously meeting your heroes, like people who really inspired you, is an amazing experience.
Right.
And all the talks were, you know, great about time management, how to learn languages. And then we just socialed. It was just at this hostel. We were just, when the talks were over, we just went to the rooftop bar to get some beers, and we just walked around the lobby. It was 24/7, so we just walk around, and it's hard to explain without, you know, having been. It's hard to explain to the people who haven't been there, but it's just, people are so amazing and humble and friendly. Even though I came in there speaking Danish, English, and some German, you know, probably to the extent that I could carry a conversation. And then I knew four words in Russian or something. That was the time we talked about. And nobody ever said anything about, you know, me speaking three languages. It was totally, oh, cool. So what are you working on? And mm-hmm. How do you plan to do this? And even those people who spoke like a million languages, they were so friendly and welcoming and just willing to share their passion and ideas. And those are the people I really wanted to kind of aspire to be one day as well. So I don't know if that's enough of an explanation of why the gathering is so good, but it was just fantastic. I can't recommend it enough.
Oh, it sounds amazing. I really wish I could go this year. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get over, but
yeah, there's still some spots available. You should go. Visit Europe.
Yeah, no, I would love to. And I guess there's the Polyglot Conference in New York also later the year.
Right. I haven't been to a conference yet because they were in sort of very obscure places. Even though I live in Europe, getting to somewhere like Budapest is not as easy as getting to Berlin. Mm-hmm. You know, Copenhagen to Berlin is a 45-minute flight, and it costs nothing, $100 return or something. And getting to Budapest was something like a few hours, maybe even a layover, and it was like, you know, 3-4 times the price, plus accommodation and everything. And I'm on a student budget, or I was on a student budget back then. So I just couldn't really go. And I would love to go to the New York one. But the problem is, of course, now we're suddenly talking about crossing the Atlantic Ocean.
Right.
And that's going to be, you know, I don't know what a trip like that would cost. But, I mean, it's definitely a lot more money than going to Berlin.
Yeah.
And they're only 2 days, and they're a lot more formal. They're a lot more about the talks than the social in between. So for me, I would just be going to meet friends again, you know, keep the networking alive, meet all the people I met in Berlin, and maybe have a do a talk if I could find anything interesting to talk about. But I would definitely recommend people, particularly those in Europe, to go to the Berlin gathering instead. It's a lot more informal, and people are just kind of, you know, talking all the time, and there's like games nights and food nights and even concerts and stuff. So yeah, the conference, if you are in New York, I would obviously recommend you to go, because you can't get enough motivation in this game. But if you're in Europe like me and it's a long way and you might not have the money for it, I don't think it's the end of the world. There'll be another one that's a little bit closer, and you know, the gathering is gonna suffice for me anyway.
I'm looking at this list now of speakers, and I'm just like, I have to go to this thing.
Right.
I have to go.
The Berlin one or the
Berlin one. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's basically a who's who of anyone who's ever said anything about learning languages.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a very nice, nice crowd. And what I like about it is they also do a lot of, you know, a lot of, I wouldn't say weird talks, but there are a lot of talks, not just about learning languages. Or if it is about learning languages, they have a lot of unique angles as well. So for me, it's quite exciting. And obviously, I'm going to be bringing my own recording equipment for my podcast, and I'm going to get a lot of, you know, on the set, or however you want to say it, a lot of live recordings of people just enjoying this buzz that is Polyglot Berlin. It's very affordable as well.
Well, speaking of interviewing, you know, other language learners and polyglots, your podcast, I think you're over, was it 45 episodes now?
The 50th episode will go live to.
Okay. Which is amazing. I mean, I've been very infrequent in my podcast. I mean, I've been doing it since 2009 and only have, I think, 15 episodes. Right. So I'm very impressed with your ability to, you know, consistently put out interviews. What have been some of the themes that you've picked up from interviewing all these amazing language learners? Are there certain universal things you've noticed among them, or is everyone completely different, or what are some of the takeaways you've had?
It's a really good question, and I also thought about writing a book about this topic, which may or may not happen, but I think that the biggest takeaway is just that like I alluded to before, it's just language learning is so subjective that while you can get motivation, inspiration, tips, ideas, tricks, methods, suggestions, ideas, whatever from everyone, ultimately you're going to find what works for you. And I think that really comes through in the interviews, because every single week I learn something new from whoever is on. Like some of the surprises, I guess I can share, is that people who know a lot of languages haven't spent a lot of time on them, which was very surprising to me. I always thought that people who knew, let's say, 12, 14 languages, I thought these people would just be buried in books all day. And of course, there is, you know, you get to a number where you need to. Somebody like Alexander Arkells, you know, the doctor, he speaks some 30 or 40 languages. Of course, and he has a routine on YouTube. It's actually quite funny. You know how bodybuilders and stuff put, you know, my daily routine. Right. And then he put like the polyglot workout or something. Uh-huh. And that's what he does. And he's incredibly talented and focused on doing, you know, a lot of work in a sort of, it's a lot of time compared to other learners, but it's a relatively short amount of time compared to how many languages he knows. But he would just sit down for hours and read and shadow, and he has a very particular program. Mm-hmm. So he's very disciplined. But somebody like, you know, Alex Rawlings, who I think he was just 21 when he learned over 10 languages, you know, he said he was the one who just gave me the idea of 3 sessions of 20 minutes per day. And I was like, what? Is that all you did? And he said, yeah, that's, for me, that's perfect. So that really surprised me that these big language learners didn't spend a lot of time per day. It was, they all said to me that it was more about the consistency. So it's more doing something every day rather than how much you do per day. So that was a big kind of revelation. And then there's, of course, one of the cool themes that I've discovered over the episode is that just how much language learning has parallels to everyday life, like, and how similar it is to health. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how, if you feel good in real life, I say real life, like, like language learning is not real life, but of course it is. But, you know, outside language learning, if you feel good, if you have things under control, if you have a stable situation, job, partner, children, whatever, then your language learning is going to be infinitely better. But if you, like you talked about earlier, if you eat crappy foods, if you don't exercise, if you never get out, if you don't get your vitamins, whatever, your language learning is going to suffer. And you can use this kind of motivation to learn languages more efficiently. And I really enjoyed talking about general self-help, because at first I just thought, oh, it's just language learning. Why do you need to talk about, you know, getting up in the morning or, mm-hmm. but that's really fascinating. And I'm really proud of all the episodes, because like you say, there's just so many different opinions and ways to do things. And I just learned something every week. And I was doing a guest post for Memrise recently, and I was trying to come up with, you know, my top 10 things I've learned. And I was just thinking, well, it's going to be easy, no problem. And the more I thought about it, it's just like, there are no sort of standout. I guess if you interviewed 50 bodybuilders, I'm pretty sure you would get like a list of this is what you should do. But I guess for language learning, it's just so personal, so subjective, mm. that every single person has their own way of doing things. And so I guess my top giveaway would be this, you know, do something every day, try to keep it regular and don't give up, because there'll definitely be challenges like burnouts, and you're going to feel like crap at times because you're like, oh, I've been studying for 3 months and I can't say goodbye or something.
Right.
It's devastating. But if you keep going, you get to a kind of a euphoric state. And it's just it's so incredible. The first time I had my first Russian tutoring lesson, and of course my tutor is fantastic, and she was accommodating to my level, meaning that she spoke very clearly, she spoke very slowly, she used simple words. But I tell you what, after speaking Russian for an hour for the first time in my life without English, the feeling was insane. Like I was buzzing like I'd been taking drugs or something. The adrenaline was rushing through my body, and I was just feeling like I could run a marathon by then. And that feeling and that stage in my language learning would not have happened if I gave up at that 3 month mark where I couldn't say hello.
Right. Yeah, you have to go through that.
Yeah.
Well, it reminds me earlier talking about, you know, putting up a lot of these polyglots on pedestals and looking how amazing they are, and, you know, and how I think part of the psychological game too in the beginning is not comparing yourself to these other people. Use them to get inspired, but don't compare yourself to them. Compare yourself to you yesterday, you know.
Exactly. I agree. I think they're amazing people, most of them, but it's not good to compare yourself directly. I mean, I definitely saw that firsthand, that where I was just kind of, oh, if Benny can do it, I can do it. And that's right to an extent, but you don't, you know, when you learn how to swim, you don't just jump in at the deep end, right? So you need to kind of ease yourself into it by just taking these baby steps we also talked about earlier. And in that sense, everything sort of ties together just nicely.
Right. But then, you know, going back to the other extreme is, you know, don't stay in the shallow end either. You know, make sure you start swimming out into the deep end, you know, don't be afraid of it.
And that's so difficult because, you know, you mentioned earlier that you were an extrovert, and I'm sure this is easy for you, but somebody like me who's introverted, it's so difficult to talk to people on the street, no matter what language. Mm-hmm. So, you know, talking to strangers in the target language that you're practicing, it's just so hard. Yeah. But that's the equivalent of swimming into the deeper end. And you need to challenge yourself that way to get better. You know, maybe it was a reality show, actually. It's a sort of a pickup artist group, you know, these men who apparently learn to seduce women. And one of the things was a lot of people were afraid to just go and talk to women on the street. Mm-hmm. And I found that very similar to language learning, where it takes a lot of, but it's very scary to talk to people in another language. But that's the way you improve, right?
Right.
So when I booked that first Skype lesson, and this is another true story, when I booked the first Skype lesson, it wasn't with the tutor I had now. It's with another tutor who was from the Ukraine. And for a week, I was like shaking of the thoughts of this language lesson, because I was like, I know my Russian is crap. She's going to laugh at me and I'm going to be total humiliation and it's going to be terrible. And on the day, I actually couldn't sleep some of the nights because I was just like, oh my God, this is going to be terrible. And I'm sure a lot of people might have experienced the same, but then on the day she cancels and I'm like, yes, it was the best. Yes, I knew it. And then, of course, that's not a great response, but that was what happened. And apparently there was a war in the Ukraine, which is still kind of going on. So I was celebrating a little bit. Wasn't really that nice. She had to flee her home city or something.
Oh, my goodness.
That wasn't nice. But anyway, I never actually got to talk to her again. But it was just interesting that after that, it took me another month and a half to book the first lesson.
Yeah.
And that just showed you that you need to jump into it. And I hope that by sharing how awesome it was when I finally dug into the deep end, that other people who are hesitating might want to try it a little bit earlier, because tutors are amazing. I have never had a bad experience with tutors. They're so, they're so easy to work with, and they adjust so much to your level. And if you have trouble, they'll just type it for you, or most of them anyway.
Right.
So there's really nothing to be afraid of. You're speaking a new foreign language. I mean, what do you expect?
and they know that too. And they, most people on, these tutor sites, they also are learning languages themselves. So they're typically very empathetic about it. And I think it's very powerful too, to hear that, that you had that fear going in as of I, and as of probably everybody. I mean,
I still get nervous actually. That's probably addition. every single tutoring session I have, the Skype call comes in. Yep. I see the picture of my tutor and I'm scared shitless.
Yeah.
So sorry for the language.
No, that's fine.
But, it's just, I don't know what it is, because obviously I've had some 25, 30 hours with this person. So it's not like we don't know each other, but it's just this, when you add this foreign language into the mix, and if anyone has any idea of why this happens in the first place, I'd be happy to hear it. But it has to be something to do with, the fear of being humiliated or something, or saying something wrong or doing a mistake.
Right.
And that's also one of the biggest takeaways that I've learned, is like, just to make tons of mistakes. Even if you know it's wrong, just say it anyway, because then you'll figure out what the right is.
Right.
If you don't say anything, then there's nothing to correct. And you will never learn how to speak properly. That's how we develop as well.
Don't take yourself too seriously.
Right.
Yeah. Be okay with being a baby.
Right. And I have lots of fun in my lessons as well once they're started. And right back at your walking analogy, which isn't even an analogy, but you're actually walking. Once you get into the lesson, I get very comfortable very quickly. And we have fun. And if I say something really stupid, which frankly I do quite a lot, I just laugh it off. And, I can't give an example in Russian, but in Esperanto, in Berlin, I was at an Esperanto course. And I accidentally said it in the morning. I said, if we have time, can we go and buy a cafe? And that's just hilarious, and I love my host. They just did this deadpan, I don't think we have time, but maybe we can get a coffee. It was just perfect comedy timing from them. And I do this all the time in Russian, where I'll try and say something and it's not even close, or I'll use the wrong pronoun or something or whatever, and we'll laugh about it. And so that's the point, is once you're in the session, it's fine. It's just the anticipation is killing, so just get over it and just call that tutor and get started.
Right. Yep. I think that's it. Just do it. That's the key.
Just do it. That's a fantastic slogan for everything, I find. Yeah,
I've heard it somewhere. I can't remember where I heard that.
No. It's brilliant anyway.
Hopefully Nike won't sue us.
Maybe they'll sponsor your podcast.
There you go. I don't know if I want them though. Anyway, well, Chris, we just went over an hour here, and I know it's late in the evening for you. Is there anything else, like final words you have for budding language learners out there?
I think that's it. I mean, if I love to hear about people's language learning stories, and if they're struggling with anything like me, you know, like depression or being lazy or generally mediocrity, then I'd be happy to connect. You know, on actualfluency.com, there's a contact button on top. I'd love to hear from people.
And definitely check out Chris's podcast. It's amazing.
And AFpodcast.com. Thank you for the shout out. Yeah. Definitely appreciate it. No, it's season 2 starting very soon.
Well, it was a pleasure talking to you. And if all goes well, see you in Berlin.
Oh, yeah. You should definitely come. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure talking with you.
Thank you for listening. For show notes, go to languagemastery.com. And to earn some karma, go over to iTunes, go to the store, search for Language Mastery, and leave a review of the show. It helps more people find us. Thank you, and talk to you next time.